Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Happy to be here. Excited for tonight's pod, post-game pod, so I have a little extra juice for y'all. Shout out to all the dunkers. Thank you for embracing your bounce. Got a treat for you here tonight. Nikias has brought back his white tank top energy. This one is a lot cleaner than last time, so I don't know if he got an upgrade in the budget there, wardrobe-wise. But he appears ready to go. I don't know if it's a celebration of Chris Middleton or Chris Paul, maybe both. I'm not certain at this point. Maybe he spilled some apple juice on his other shirt. I'm also not certain about that. But I do know we are here, we are ready to go, and we are fired up.
Okay. I'm going to be honest. That intro was not as inflammatory as I thought it was going to be. I am in relaxed attire at the moment. Got to let the arms breathe a little bit. But happy to be here. Feels like it's been 20 years since we've been here, though clearly that isn't the case. Last time we talked, we had questions heading into the finals. And now we have a 2-1 series. The Phoenix Suns are up, though the Milwaukee Bucks were able to get a 20-point lead on tonight. We're recording late on Sunday night. Fun stuff. But before we get into the finals, we did have some news and also another game that we can briefly discuss. First and foremost, former Dallas Mavericks assistant coach Jamal Mosley, he left after Jason Kidd ended up getting the Mavericks job. For whatever reason, he got the Mavericks job. Jamal Mosley is hired by the Orlando Magic to be their new head coach. Steve, I will give you the floor very briefly. How do you feel about the hire? And what do you think is going to be priority number one for him as he takes this new job?
Well, it's good. It's exciting that Orlando went in that direction. When they had the list, I was curious on where Orlando would go. I didn't know if veteran would work. I mean, if you get rid of Steve Clifford, obviously you're trying to go in a different direction. Obviously you're trying to rebuild. So giving him this opportunity seemed right. Give him a first time guy, give him 4 years. I think it's great for him. He put the work in, so he obviously deserved this opportunity, and salute to him for that. I think it'll be interesting as far as how he goes about it. This is a very young team and they're trying to find what they are. And he's going to have to make sure he builds, quote unquote, a culture, make sure he develops these guys, make sure that he gets them moving in the right direction. That's going to be the first step for him. And then obviously the winning will have to come. Hopefully he'll get the opportunity to not just nurture this team, but actually win with this team. Oftentimes we see coaches get these jobs and not necessarily get the opportunity to make it to the next step or the next phase. So, it's on that side, I'm excited for him, but also it's very interesting how much work he had to put in for this to be his first opportunity. And that's kind of where I'm at with it, balancing that. But salute to him. Salute to him.
Nice to see him get the job. Like, it's the Dallas thing is still very weird to me. I don't want to hang too long on that. But for him to kind of be, from what I've seen and what I've read, like, Luka seems to like him quite a bit. Rick Carlisle leaves kind of abruptly, takes a new job. You would think the natural progression would be Jamal Mosley, since he already has a relationship with the franchise star who needs to be appeased for very obvious reasons. And for him to kind of get skipped over for Jason Kidd, of all people, is odd. But he does get the head coaching job in Orlando, so that's obviously a big deal for him. I'm curious to see, like, what he's going to run. I think even at this point, Orlando's most intriguing prospect on the roster is Jonathan Isaac, and he's going to miss most of, if not all, of next season. So I'm curious to see what kind of scheme he's going to run. Like, is this going to be a faster team than what Steve Clifford wanted to run in Orlando? What kind of principles is he looking to instill? Who's going to lead the dance is kind of where I'm at with Orlando. Well, obviously, we still have the draft coming up in free agency, but Markelle Fultz may be on his way back due to injury. Obviously have Cole Anthony there. So they're going to have multiple ball handlers. I'm just curious to see, like, what this roster is going to look like and how much of a leash he's actually going to be given.
Was that Cole Anthony slander that I heard?
No.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to confirm. I expect him to have a good amount of room to put his imprint on this team. I think we'll see a lot of pace. We'll see a lot of movement. I think there'll probably be an effort to improve the defense and make sure this is a team that competes every single night and get the most out of these young guys. I mean, you need to attach yourself to these young guys. You need these young guys to perform and get to another level so you know what you have. So I think it's a good opportunity for him to embrace that role. I think he's the right kind of coach for this type of team and where they're headed, where they're trying to get to. And I'm excited to see what he does with it. You know, it's one thing to work your way to the spot, but when you move to that chair, it's a little bit different. So he's going to have to make sure that he's ready to go and make sure he gets the buy-in and connects with these guys on a different level. You know, it's one thing to connect when you're an assistant. It's a different thing to connect as a head coach, especially with a young team looking to find their way. So I'm very interested to see what's going to happen, but it's positive. It's positive. For him to get the opportunity, it's a positive.
Kudos to one Jamal Mosley. And before we move on to the finals talk, there was another basketball game on the men's side, at the very least. Team USA had an exhibition game against Nigeria and lost, which is not something that many people had coming into that one. Of course, it's just an exhibition, so it only means so much, but still a surprise, which leads me to the most important stat that you were here on this podcast. KZ Okpala was a +3. In a 3-point win. Steve, what are your thoughts?
KZ Okpala was he had no points.
You know who else had no points? Kevin Durant on the final possession of that game, because KZ Okpala did not let him catch the basketball.
Are you really turning Nigeria Team USA into praise for KZ Okpala, who played 20 minutes of that contest? Caleb Agata was tremendous. Gabe Benzit was great. Precious Achiuwa had so many plays. Nigeria hit 20 plus threes. And you're telling me about KZ Okpala's 20 minutes where he did nothing.
I just did not take you as someone that did not appreciate on-ball and off-ball defense. This is interesting.
KZ Okpala right now.
Wow. This is some hardcore hating right now on KZ Okpala. Where's the love for the defense? What's happening?
Because you started so much that Nigeria did in that game, and you started with KZ Okpala, who was not an impact player in that contest. You could have at least gone with the Epke Udo Bam Adebayo joke, or you could have came with some Team USA slander. You want to come with KZ Okpala +3.
What? +3? What do you mean +3 in a 3-point win? That seems important. The defense was there. Full court pressure on Dame. Nice defense on Bradley Beal in points. Nice defense on Kevin Durant, particularly on the last possession of the game. What are we doing here? This is the dunker spot. We praise players that defend and execute the game plan. That's what he did.
Not at the start.
Unbelievable.
Not off rip.
Wow.
Not with how Nigeria took that game, exhibition, but a historic upset. And they played, scrapped, and won that game, played with confidence. It grew. Team USA didn't have their footing. And you want to talk about KZ Okpala?
Yeah. Defensive versatility. Nigeria threw Team USA's offense off with all the switching. KZ Okpala was a big part of that. Like, what's the problem? What is the problem?
Kate. Nigeria ran dribble handoffs for 90% of that game, and Team USA was stunned that they kept shooting threes. And Nigeria kept shooting threes, and they kept making them. And then it just kept going on and on. So, no, KZ Okpala is not my top five reasons why Nigeria won that game. Sorry, buddy.
Wow.
Nope, sorry. No, give Precious some praise. His defense was great.
His defense was fantastic.
KZ Okpala.
I don't understand why we're getting KZ Okpala hate. This is incredible.
This man started with KZ Okpala. Darius Garland and Sadiq Bey. Salute to them for getting those minutes they got in the fourth quarter, but that told me exactly where Team USA was at. I think Team USA will be fine. I mean, the on-ball switches were okay. I was a little surprised that they kept letting Nigeria get some of those looks off, but they had some good half-court moments. They just offensively have to get their rhythm together. Obviously, they have to learn how to play together, learn the rules, the increased physicality, and kind of clean up some of that. It's interesting because Zach LaVine basically was the backup one for them since Drew is still in the finals, so it was interesting at times. And Kevin Durant had a lot of good looks that he didn't make. So I was encouraged at times by Team USA. I'm not going to judge them off that. I'd rather salute Nigeria. That was a hell of a performance by them. Caleb Agata. Woo! Mie Oni. Woo! that they were Gabe Vincent. They were not. They were going for it.
They were cooking. Like, this is basically basically a Miami Heat end of the bench homecoming for this game. Strong defense from KZ Apollo once again. Want to shout him out. But no, as you mentioned at the top, Precious Achiuwa's defense was incredible. Obviously, the big highlight was the meet him at the rim block against Kevin Durant. But had some timely switches. The physicality was there. He filled the gaps offensively. Not enough to be said about Gabe Vincent. Shot the skin off the ball. Also, also provided some nice full court pressure on ball. On ball defense was there for him as well. Ekpe Udoh. I'm not even going to lean to the joke. It's fine. We'll leave it there. But props to Nigeria for the effort that they had. Like you mentioned, like Team USA did miss a lot of shots. Like, I want to see. I don't get the random Garland Bay minutes. Like, if you're going to work them in, actually work them in. Like, I don't get sprinkling that in. Like, I don't. How are they supposed to find footing at all? Like, I get it's an exhibition. So that's even
more. Exhibition, they're not really on the team. I mean, you just give them minutes. Hey, thanks for your efforts. Appreciate you. Come play.
They got good for him minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was an exhibition. I mean, John Jenkins was out there in a Team USA uniform. And post-game, here comes all the slander from people who didn't watch the game. I know y'all didn't watch the game. I'm talking to you specifically. Whoever hears this and feels some type of way, you didn't watch the game. And you posted jokes after it. Like, ha, 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 ha. Man, as soon as I saw Darius Garland, Sadiq Bey on the floor in the fourth, I knew what time it was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Bam Adebayo was super aggressive. I thought Jason Tatum looked good. His drives. Draymond Green is fun with great players again and playing defense.
Making layups and such. You know?
Wow. Draymond Green slander. Let me check his age real quick. I don't
know. This is the first. Let me check his age.
Just give me 1 second. Internet's okay. Loading.
What? And we are off.
I thought you were going to go with Kevin Love slander.
He didn't play long enough for me to slander him.
I mean, there's a reason.
Kevin Love slander?
Not slander. I think this is going to be good for him to find his footing, get him back to being Kevin Love. It's going to take a little bit. It's going to take a little bit.
I mean, playing 3 minutes is one way for him to find his footing.
I mean, he had 3 fouls in 3 minutes, my guy.
Seems like he found everything but his footing. Jason Tatum looked really good.
Let me check his age again.
The double age check with Draymond Green and Kevin Love, just on the opposite end of the spectrum in like literally everything. It's great. Except the age spectrum, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see Team USA play the next game, see how they grow. They had enough stretches for me to remain intrigued and not feel like the end of the world is coming. So more salute to Nigeria, although, man, I can't believe y'all left Ike Diagu off the roster. Man, carried that nation for a decade. But Mike Brown was coaching his tail off. Mike Brown was hot. He ain't get no looks. he saw Steve Kerr down there and Pop. He said, I got y'all. Don't worry about it. And got him. Dribble handed off them to death. And then you had Foul Up 3 Twitter ruining the end of that game.
How did they ruin the game for you?
Kevin Durant came down 3. They fouled immediately. And then it was just fouls, 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 fouls. Boo that. Boo y'all.
I mean, it's strategy, you know? You don't want to get, especially since, I mean, KD shot poorly for like 98% of the game, but then he got cooking late in fourth, so I understand, like, not letting him.
He got super cooking. He missed those three, and then he made a bunch in a row. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I want to see the combos. I want to see what they put forward. I have a question for you, going back to the coaching conversation real quick.
Okay.
How do you feel about the super coach era? Because we had Kenny Atkinson move to the Warriors. We had David Vanderpool kind of take the
Brooklyn job, right?
Ime Udoka spot in Brooklyn. From your perspective, as one of the most esteemed, most esteemed, brilliant basketball minds that we have with a pen in his hand, how do you feel about kind of the super coach era?
I feel like that was laid on very thick, but I get it. Like, it kind of stinks for like David Vanderpool in particular. Like, I mean, the Brooklyn job seems to be a good one. So I get it from his perspective, but I hate it's kind of come to that for him. because he was right there in Minnesota. And even though Chris Finch did a good job, like, I guess it's kind of justified why Minnesota took him. Like, that situation was still very weird for him. And that's after him being in Portland for a long time as well. So, like, I hate that he's kind of, like, the ceiling seems to be top assistant instead of him actually getting a shot. So I want to see what the next year or two is going to look like for him. If Brooklyn's able to add some pieces, make a deeper run in the postseason next year, maybe that looks better for him on his resume. Maybe that's the springboard for him. But I think that's the path. Like, get yourself on a good team where you're going to be visible, kind of rehab your image if it needs rehabbing, or kind of bolster the resume that way. I think that makes sense.
Well, it's the new path. I mean, the old path used to be if you were a head coach and you got let go, you just go on TV or you sit at home and they call you back. Now, you look at darn near every team, they got a head coach as an assistant coach and, like, active, you know. And so it's interesting because you only have so much of a window to be, quote unquote, a hot name. You know, Vanderpool was up there. Now you look at kind of the searches now, Washington, Orlando, it's kind of the same names. It's Wes Unseld and it's Jamal Mosley, it's Charles Lee. You know, it's all about perception. But the interesting part for me is who's going to get the bump from these teams doing well? You know, if Golden State does better, is it going to be Mike Brown? Is it going to be Kenny Atkinson? You know, is it? We saw what happened with the Clippers where Chauncey went ahead and got it, but look who else was on that staff. And so it's kind of interesting to me to see, like, okay, I understand what you're doing. I understand that winning will help everyone perception wise, but there's only so many spots and there's only so many ways that you can get up there. Yep. And there's only so many ways you can work yourself back in and heat yourself back up. So that part will be interesting because we got a whole lot of names, I mean, Terry Stotts still on the sideline, might stay there. Lloyd Pierce, top assistant. He just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, and he was just in a scenario where Nate McMillan was his top assistant. So it's like, y'all all kind of doing the same thing right now. Just an observation I had. Figured I'd throw it out there for the Dunkers.
This is what we do on the Dunkers. But yeah, I think it's probably just going to be, on either end of the spectrum. It's either, hey, let me find a really good team, get some wins, get my face out there, or let me peep and see whose seat is a little bit, you know, room temperature, a little bit of humidity there, a little bit of heat. Let me hop on here to help, quote unquote, and see what happens. So I think that's probably the path. Like, I don't know if we, I'm not going to make that point. Like, I don't know who's going to be good on TV, who isn't. So let's not go there.
You had some Shaq and Charles slander in the clip.
No, but I mean, if we can get some, never mind. Anyway, yeah, basketball people on basketball shows. Who knows? Yeah, we might get some.
Oh, here you go.
Yeah, no, we don't have to do that tonight. It's fine. The NBA finals are here, Steve.
Yes, they are. They've arrived. We had a lot of questions last time. We got some answers now. Yes. Very intrigued. You were on the highest of horses last time we spoke. Had a Chris Middleton, Chris Paul half uniform on. I don't know how you got that custom made so quickly, but after three games, what is your perspective? What are your thoughts?
Like, my initial thought before we even get into, like, scheme stuff or whatever, Giannis is just incredible. Giannis is easily the best player in this series. And, like, the fact that he is dominating the way that he is, not even or barely 2 weeks from the injury, is absurd to me. Like, I don't know what that training staff did to get him ready, but everyone on that staff deserves a raise because he looks like he didn't leave. And this is what, back-to-back 40 balls for Giannis at this point, was able to get the win in game three tonight.
Back-to-back 40-point games, 40-point double-double back-to-back games. Only him, LeBron, and Shaq have done that in the finals.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that that is very good company to be in. You know, only two of the best interior scorers the NBA has ever seen. Seems like a pretty good camp to be in, if you're Giannis. And so that's my initial takeaway. Like, he's been incredible.
Well, let's stick on Giannis real quick. Let's spread it out. He's been great. I thought in game three, he was able to make an impact, not just scoring wise, but also making plays. Thought he made some plays early on, which I thought was important because Giannis scoring is usually something that teams don't want to happen, but can find a way to live with. Mm-hmm. And you could tell, I think game two, Giannis was great, but Phoenix was okay with it because they were locked in on everyone else. This becomes a scenario where they're looking to help a little bit more. And now Milwaukee actually did a good job of using Giannis' scoring and putting him in different matchups, attacking different guys, especially second unit guys. And, you know, he's been a little bit more demonstrative as far as getting the ball when he has certain matchups. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a big key. And if he can not only score, draw fouls, and convert, I mean, 13 to 17 from the free throw line in game three, courtesy of a very, 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 very quiet Milwaukee Bucks home arena, that's key. And he's been incredible. You know, we've seen the whole show from him, transition, driving, the post hook, the post fade. So I think this has been a legacy stamping series for me, from Giannis, as far as, okay, he's win or lose, he's done what he's supposed to do. He's earned that kind of respect, or at least he should have.
Like, I want to take it back to game two, the third quarter in particular, when Giannis just decided nobody can guard me, while simultaneously nobody else on his team could knock down a shot. And you made note that Phoenix was mostly okay with him scoring the way that he did, because they were kind of focused on everyone else. Like, I'm kind of torn on how to feel about that kind of, how I feel about the kind of discourse. Cause like, on one hand, like, I feel like, hey, Giannis is obviously Milwaukee's best player, so they don't want him to go off. And he's also kind of this battering ram in which they don't really have an answer for. But what I saw creep up is the notion that it wasn't as far as Giannis being like empty calories, but it was just kind of like what he did didn't matter. And I feel like that kind of went too far. Not saying that that's what you said, but like that's some of the
Steve Jones Jr. slander.
that's a good shot. But no, yeah. Like I don't think that's not the point you were making in particular. But like that was a point that I saw and heard be made. And I don't know how I feel about that.
I think they're two different discussions. I think if you're saying Giannis doesn't impact the game because he's just scoring, that's different than Phoenix is okay with him scoring. Like, they're, obviously they're not. Like, they don't want that to happen, but they're not going to overreact to it. That's different than saying it doesn't matter if Giannis does that, they're still going to lose. Like, I feel like those are two different conversations. I feel like the lines are kind of blurred. So I understand what you're saying. And I can understand how you can see that and be like, what are you talking about? Giannis is incredible. But at the same time, if I'm Phoenix, the second that I overreact or I start overhelping, now that opens something up for Milwaukee. And now I have to deal with both scenarios where Giannis is doing Giannis things and now he's kicking and other guys are doing what they can and making shots and driving kick and getting rotation, which happened in game three. We'll talk about it here soon about your boy Chris Middleton. But I think that's, to me, is the difference. Is, and it's important for Milwaukee. You need Giannis to be able to not only score, but to bend the defense and force that help and make those plays, which I thought he did early on, set the tone. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if he can hold that, you know, if they can continue to attack and force Phoenix to now help. So now he's scoring, he's drawing fouls, he's making plays, and now you have something that's really tough to deal with, as opposed to the scenario in game two where, yeah, he's scoring, but who else is? And we're not leaving them. So have a blast. So I feel like those kind of are two different scenarios. But I agree with you. I mean, if you're saying Giannis scoring is empty calories, you should probably go on a different diet.
You know what? I'll allow it. That's fine. we'll give it to you. But no, let's stay there. Because like you touched on something that I wanted to get into. And that's also something I want to transition to a question that we had, that I had coming into the series. So from Milwaukee's side, one thing that you pointed out during your live game thread was that Phoenix defended Chris Middleton in particular differently. And you made the point about Giannis not just scoring but being the defense. But Phoenix kind of shifting their coverage, being more aggressive against Chris Middleton, opened up some things, and he was able to bend the defense, and that made him and everyone else more of a threat.
No, yeah, and I thought that was big, especially when it happened. That game was still in the balance when the Suns decided, hey, we're going to kind of put two on the ball. That's Chris Middleton. And it's something that we talked about during the Atlanta series in those games when Giannis was out, where Chris Middleton was not just scoring, but now Atlanta was throwing him more attention. He was making plays. And for this Milwaukee team, you can't allow that to happen. You know, Chris Middleton is a guy who can make you pay with his shot making. He can make tough shots. He can create his own basket. You have to live with the good and the bad of that defensively. Once he makes enough shots, or you feel like he's in a rhythm where you have to send more attention, that opens things up. And for Milwaukee, that's huge, because in games one and two, they could not find the pressure point, especially against that starting lineup. They could not find the opening in the half court necessarily. I mean, the Suns did a really good job when Middleton was in pick and roll. Hey, DeAndre Ayton's going to be in a drop. All the help is going to come from the strong side wing. So anytime you come off that space, you're looking for that pull up, there's a stunt right there. And now you can't kick it out because I'm going right back. And now Ayton's still right in front of you. And Middleton got his looks. But in game three, where they started to put two on the ball, that opened the roll up. And now that opens up Middleton Giannis pick and roll. And now you have a problem where now Middleton's making shots. He's creating opportunities for Giannis. He's kicking out for Drew. And Milwaukee, I thought, did a good job of making sure that Drew was in the weak side at times when they ran those actions. Now there's two on the ball. You have to make a decision. Do you want to help off Drew or do you want to help on the roll and those kind of things? But as soon as they put two on the ball against Middleton, to me, it just changed so much because Milwaukee had something they could go to. And, Phoenix had been so solid and so just direct with their help and being able to stay in front. Even if they got beat on the drive, they could give more help. Mm-hmm. Two on the ball makes it a little bit tricky, and Milwaukee was able to exploit that.
I was genuinely confused by Phoenix deciding to go that route. I can understand the logic because I think from Milwaukee's perspective, like they have a roster of like Giannis is a good passer. Drew is a good passer. Chris is a good passer. They don't have a great passer on the roster. So I can understand the gamble of, hey, in addition to just kind of switching and keeping things in front and slowing down the offense and seeing if you can, you know, basically baiting them into beating you with tough shots. Let's also mix in some traps just to see where the decision-making is, see where the processing speed is. Let's see if we can force some turnovers and get some easy ones on the other end. So I get the gamble. But like you said, like if you're sending two to the ball, if the decision is made correctly, and to Chris Middleton's credit, it was, now you're just opening things up for an offense that has struggled to consistently generate good looks for themselves, with a lot of that being their fault. We've talked about this throughout the postseason, that the low-hanging fruit has been just there, and they grab it sometimes. Sometimes they just kind of push the tree and walk under it or whatever. So it was odd that Phoenix gave them the option, especially once it started working. I mean, it didn't work, and they just kept sending two to the ball. And then Milwaukee started making shots. They kept making shots. They got hot. Like, I think they ended – they ended what quarter? Third quarter in the second quarter on a 16-0 run. And it's just like at a certain point, like just go back to what got you there. Like just switch. Like as you mentioned, like we talked about this in the Atlanta series when Giannis went down. One of my concerns is that Chris Middleton is not someone that generates separation by himself. Like he's just not that guy. Like his value is if you leave him open, he's going to knock it down because he's one of the best shooters on the planet. But ultimately, he'll sprinkle in post fades in your face. If he's knocking down pull-ups, they're coming in your face. If it's a step back, it's in your face. Like the high release point and just his general size, like the tough shot making is what makes him him. He doesn't create a bunch of easy looks. So I don't get feeding him easy decisions at a certain point. It's just kind of odd to me.
Yeah, and not even just him, just feeding that offense, as you mentioned, seasoning. Like you handed them the seasoning. And now a team that was struggling to generate looks is now having your defense in rotation and playing drive and kick and being able to get in the paint and get paint touches and get layups and play out of it. And that was the interesting part, because Phoenix had been so strong in the first two games defensively as far as staying solid, helping at the right time, keeping everything in front, and forcing Milwaukee to bog down. Now you open that up, and I thought that was just it just kind of blew things open, especially in that second quarter.
Yeah, I just it was just a thing that I didn't get. Like, I would imagine we're going to see some kind of shift heading into game four. But that brings me to one of the questions I had coming into the series on the other end. One of the first questions that I asked you on the preview pod was what coverage you thought Milwaukee was going to use against Phoenix. If they were going to start with a drop and then alternate, or if they're going to start switching and then alternate. And it seemed from the jump like they wanted to switch. And I found that to be interesting. Not good, not bad. It was interesting because I didn't think that they were going to go switch as a base. But they went there. Phoenix was able to kind of carve them up in game one. Game two, Milwaukee continues to switch, but they didn't switch everything. There was more on-ball pressure, like Phoenix would run double drag or something. You'd have Drew Holiday chasing over the first screen, and they're switching the second instead of just switching everything like they did in game one. So that adjustment was there. And then we get to game three tonight. It felt like there was a little less switching from Milwaukee's point. Again, extending that ball pressure. Picking up Chris Paul full court, picking up Chris Campaign full court, picking up Devin Booker full court. Still kind of, you know, having that ball, having that defender trail over that first screen if there was a double screening action. Just a lot more ball pressure and kind of flustering Phoenix's offense in that way. How have you felt about Milwaukee's defensive adjustments in the series?
Well, I mean, we talked about it before, but Milwaukee is a team that has enough in their bag to make adjustments. It just takes them getting punched in the face to get there. And they sure got punched in the face in game one. They tried everything in game one. And, you know, the issue with the switches was Chris Paul basically would just walk the big to whatever spot he wanted to get to and just rise up. And then they were still able to drive and get layups, and then they were able to get drive and kick, and it didn't work. And then they went to a drop and a deep drop, and that also didn't work because Chris Paul would just escort them to whatever spot he wanted to go to and rise up. And then game two, they kind of shifted to, hey, we're going to keep Brooke in a drop or our bigs in a drop. We're going to try and navigate these screens, fight over. Any help is going to come from the strong side wing. So we're going to stunt at the free throw line, trying to take away that space there. The issue was it became an overhelp scenario, and Phoenix exploited that, and they overhelped a bunch. And even on the times when they were solid in game two, they had issues defending after the initial play, after the initial pick and roll. Their base wasn't as strong, so they get beat. Now another overhelp comes, and now it's a kick. They're making threes all over the place. I thought in game three, they were much more solid, I think tighter with what they were trying to do with that drop, and not necessarily not showing help, but not being so aggressive with it or so not being able to be exploited by it, I would say. Phoenix was still able to get to their looks, but Milwaukee was able to have a tighter base. I thought they were able to keep themselves out of rotation a little bit more, have better impact on the roll. I still thought Phoenix was able to get to what they wanted to for the majority of the first half, and then the wheels kind of fell off there in the second. But no, I like what Milwaukee is doing. You know, one of the things I pointed out after that game one is Milwaukee has a lot of things they could tighten up defensively. Mm-hmm. And they have done that. And I think this was game three. It was probably the first time since the Clippers series. The Suns haven't looked very flustered this playoff run. Lakers got them for a couple games. Clippers got them for a couple games. But otherwise, they've been in control. You know, making the shots that you think you can live with, punishing your exploits, bending your defense. But I thought Milwaukee was very good on that end, scrapping, fighting, keeping everything in front. And Phoenix kind of fed into that a little bit, I thought.
Fair enough. A question for you, since we're kind of talking about Phoenix right now.
It's fair enough when I say something trash.
No.
Dunkers. Could put that up. Dunkers. I need a vote on it. Fair, it's hashtag fair enough when I say something trash and the guys just don't want to talk about it.
I'm acknowledging your point. I don't know.
No, I need that. Someone tweet that at me if you agree.
I don't like I don't like this narrative. You made very valid points. Oh, man.
Good for him.
Now, good for him is one you could question a little bit, but fair enough is not. That is just me tipping my cap at you. That's all it is. Nothing negative at all. But on Fing's standpoint, how concerned are you about the Dario Saric injury?
I'm concerned for him personally. I hope he's okay, but it does open some things up, as we saw in game three where DeAndre Ayton gets in foul trouble. And now what do you do? Frank Kaminsky minutes were an adventure. Small lineup was an adventure. The zone worked kind of, and pick and pops with Jay Crowder worked kind of. They were able to get to drive and kick, and that kind of worked, but you lose your role man. You lose a trigger for a lot of your actions and the pressure point for Milwaukee. That allows Milwaukee to switch. That allows Milwaukee to keep everything in front. And it puts a lot of pressure on you to get to drive and kick to get Milwaukee back in rotation. So that injury is big because now you have a decision to make. If Ayton can't stay on the floor because of fouls, where do you go? I don't know how much you want to put that small lineup out there. You could do it. And they crawled their way back in that game. I'll give them credit. But it's just has such a low ceiling to me in this series. And it opens things up, or it should open things up for Milwaukee, as long as they don't get in their own way, which is always a deal. It's a big loss. Big loss, it seems, because he can eat those minutes, give you about 4 or 5. You can run a lot of the same things. And now you're kind of hoping Frank Kaminsky can hold it down.
Yeah, that just hasn't gone particularly well. I will be honest with you there. I don't know where Phoenix goes. Like, I don't love Crowder at the five. Because, as you mentioned, they did make the run in the third quarter with Crowder at the five. But also, this was the Crowder game. And if you're talking about a high variant shooting guy, like 6 or 7 for 3 for him. As someone that watched him very closely as Miami made the finals last year, Jay Crowder runs extremely hot and he runs extremely cold. So for Phoenix to get this game from Jay Crowder and kind of attempt to hold down the fort as a small ball five because of the foul trouble to Ayton, and this is the game that Phoenix loses by 20 anyway, I'm worried about what the rest of the series looks like. Because if Crowder isn't knocking down those threes on the ghost screens that they continue to run against Brook Lopez in that drop, what do you do when Ayton's on the bench? Like, I don't think Kaminsky's the answer. I don't. Like, I don't think he's not a guy that can switch. He's not particularly good in drop. Like, he's going to have to bomb away from three to make it worth it for you. And I don't know if he's going to knock down enough shots to make that worth it for you. So it's going to have to be a mix of Crowder and Torrey Craig, assuming that he's able to stay healthy. Like, had a little bit of a scare in game two, was able to play in game three. The zone was interesting to me, though, because it did fluster Milwaukee a little bit. But then Giannis was just kind of able to feast on it.
Well, yeah, Giannis figured out, oh, these guys are right here. Please give me the ball.
Yeah.
I'll be in the paint or on this side where the other guy is. And that was a wrap for that.
Yeah, so if zone is not an option for you, then you're basically just switching. And if you're switching with that kind of small unit and Giannis is on the court, then you kind of have to send extra help. I think at that point, do you just blitz Giannis and dare him to make good passes on the move?
No. No, don't do that.
Okay.
If you couldn't do it against Middleton, don't do it against Giannis. Right. What do you think about I mean, there's no difference if you throw Nader out there at the five.
No.
Are you hating?
I'm not hating, but like, if Crowder can't do it, he
Abdel hater.
That's what you wanted to set up. That was the entire reason you brought him up. You're not fooling me. Oh man!
Oh, see, you shot fake the young fella.
Yeah. Got me up in the air, 2 free throws.
Going to the line, D Wade.
Yeah. Darn it! Walked right into that. I'm very upset with myself with that one. But no, he's not the answer either. Like that becomes DeAndre Ayton's importance has risen tremendously with the injury of Dario Saric. He can't get in foul trouble.
Nah, he's the Finals MVP.
Is he?
The Suns win.
Hmm.
Am I wrong?
I don't think I would have given it to Ayton. Like, he's been very good.
Of course, you're going to give it to Chris Paul. You got to stop DeAndre Ayton.
Two for two. I don't like this.
Folks, set him up to come off the screen. Okay. And then just 1-2 up.
Yeah. Ice coverage, reject the screen, go into the pull-up. No, I respect it. Yeah, it's fine.
The hashtag is Big Mad, folks.
Big Sad. this is upset. So you go 8-0 over Paul and Booker if they're able to win the series right now.
For me, right now, as we speak, yes, I would give Ayton the MVP. Sorry, Chris. I know it's probably going to Chris Paul, but DeAndre Ayton's been great.
It is. So I guess while we're still on Phoenix, we'll swift over to Milwaukee. I do have a couple questions there as well. But how good has Cam Johnson been in this series?
Are you allowed to ask that question?
I feel like I should be.
I don't know. I think, let me see if I can look this up real quick. Uh-huh. See if my internet's working. Man, seems like you had a controversial Cam Johnson take that has resurfaced. Mm-hmm. I think you had said when he got drafted, we need to contract the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know if you wanted to address that. I think Cam Johnson's been great. I think he's had a heck of a playoff run, the way he's shooting the ball. I think defensively he's held up, which generally for a young player in this kind of run, you have concerns. I mean, he can't guard everyone, but he hasn't been in the liability zone completely unless Giannis finds him. Mm-hmm. Making shots, had a huge dunk on PJ Tucker. Side note.
Oh, this should be good.
I don't ever in my life want to see another coach challenge when someone gets dunked on. That needs to be in the rules. That needs to be in the bylaws. You cannot challenge a block charge if your player gets dunked on. That should be a rule. I'm sorry, PJ Tucker. Respect the heck out of you. Great defensive player. You got yammed on, man. Don't twirl your finger. I don't want to see any finger twirls after someone gets that kind of dunk.
PJ Tucker slander?
Absolutely not. To borrow your words.
Never thought I'd see today. Let me check his age real quick. Hold on.
Wow, the flip. Oh, yeah, yeah. Nekias Duncan tweeted on June 20th, 2019, after the Suns selected Cam Johnson with the 11th overall pick in the draft. Contraction. I'm not joking. Contraction. Get Devin Booker somewhere that matters. I'm tired. I don't even have the energy to slander them. That's enough, man. I feel so sorry for Suns fans. Cam Johnson having a great playoff run.
Cam Johnson is, in fact, having a great playoff run. It's funny.
I want to see if you switch your tune on Cam Traction Johnson.
Absolutely not. That, you didn't even feel good about that one. Absolutely not. But, no, on draft night, I was not a fan of the Cam Johnson pick. Less about Cam Johnson, the player, and more about Cam Johnson, who, from everything that I had seen and read, was mocked like late first. Getting drafted 11 for Phoenix was odd. I will put it there. Like, Steve just read out the tweet and the accompanying thread. Like, odd is a very conservative way to describe how I was feeling about that pick for Phoenix, especially considering some of the other players that are on the board. But Cam Johnson follows that up with a very good rookie season. Like, I talked about it on the timeline during that season. I've been on Locked On Suns to talk about that pick. In fact, Cam Johnson's success during his rookie season was why I was a little bit more forgiving about the Jalen Smith pick that they made this past draft. I was like, well, they identified someone in Cam Johnson. I hated the pick at the time. They were clearly right about that. They seem to have identified something in Jalen as well. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And Jalen has had COVID and has also just not played. So that pick has not panned out yet. So we'll see. But yeah, dead wrong about Cam Johnson. He has been, again, had a really good rookie season. He's followed that up with a solid campaign. And in this postseason, he has been very good. Talked about him a little bit during the Suns Clippers series, like him defensively at the point of attack. Like, that's not what you want to do. You don't want him navigate a bunch of screens, but like, he's been very good in help throughout this postseason run, particularly in this series. he's had some solid possessions against Giannis. Like, ultimately, Giannis is going to overpower him. But, like, he's tied him up a couple of times. Like, he's got some steals against him. Like, he's very much competing on that end. But I've really been impressed with the help. Like, he's been able to time out some doubles and some stunts, rotating well, playing the passing lanes on occasion. Like, he's doing everything he needs to do on defensive end. And then the shot making has just been there. Not just the shot making, but, like, he's also getting to the rim, getting there on some cuts, also designs, also just some randomness, some random lifts from the corner. Whenever Phoenix wants to set up some high lows, like he's doing a little bit of everything on both ends. So kudos to him.
Did we just spend that whole segment just so you could undo the slander that you have received online for your Cam Johnson take?
Okay, so we can't do this, right? You can't say, hey, here's your bad Cam Johnson take. Do you want to talk about it? And then I acknowledge the bad take and then talk about how good he is. And then you ask me, did we just spend the segment trying to undo the bad take? What do you want from me? What am I supposed to do? I can't win.
That's the point.
That is not how it's supposed to work. Is it Uchiwale or is it one mic? It can't be both. It can't be both. You let me know.
It's a you owe me that one song with Genuine.
A Genuine drop on the podcast. Welcome to the Dunker Spot, part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. We are here tonight.
No, I'm just playing around. Now I'll throw a question for you just to move from Cam Johnson and get you out of there. Let you refresh that tank top. Mikal Bridges, is his defense more important than his offense, or do they need him more offensively? What do you think?
That's a good question. Like, I mean, my early answer is defense, just because he has the Chris Middleton assignment. So, like, you want to fluster him, because while Giannis is easily Milwaukee's best player, like, Chris Middleton is the perimeter shot creator. So, like, if Mikal Bridges is able to kind of cut the head off the snake there, then it makes it a lot more difficult in the half court from Milwaukee. Because as we mentioned kind of at the top, like, Milwaukee has struggled, A, to create good looks for themselves, but also they don't have a bunch of guys that can actually just bend the defense. Like, it's Giannis, and then it's Hoomst that can actually bend and force rotation on a consistent manner. Like, Chris Middleton started doing it because Phoenix started sending two to the ball, but he naturally isn't that guy. So if it's already kind of a one-on-one type beat and Mikal Bridges does a good job on him, then you're not getting the production or the scrambling from the defense, and you're just even further restricted. So I think it's still the defense for Mikal Bridges, but it is nice to see him, like, knocking down some random pull-up middies, getting busy off some cuts. Like, he's been raining down threes from the corners throughout this entire postseason run. So, like, obviously you take whatever you can get from him offensively, but I think it's still the defense. Like, he just kind of sets the table there and just makes it more difficult for Milwaukee to get rolling.
I'm going to tie this back to Chris Middleton here real quick. As I was watching the game, I became slightly enraged when there was talk about how important it was for Chris Middleton to be operating with the ball in his hands, when I thought there was other things that could have been pointed out. I'll own up to that. Do you like the shift from Milwaukee? Because Mikal Bridges had success battling Chris Middleton on his off-ball actions, on his cuts, on his post-ups, do you like that he's just handling the ball more to kind of lower some of that pressure and force Phoenix into something else?
I like it. It's twofold for me. And I guess it's technically going to be slander, but I don't really intend it that way. But it's twofold for me. One, it goes to the point that you just made, just kind of getting Chris away from those off-ball actions, not letting Mikal Bridges fluster him and slowing down the offense. Because one of the things that helped Milwaukee in this game, they were able to play with a lot more pace in the half court, able to get into the actions a little bit earlier. And you combine that with Phoenix, like, sending two to the ball against Middleton, scrambling things. Like, they were just able to get to more things earlier and create a lot of high-quality looks that way. The other part is that if Chris Middleton is your primary ball handler at this point, that means you're limiting the decisions that Drew Holiday has to make and kind of simplifying things for him. Because Drew Holiday as the lead ball handler has been a mixed bag. I think we can say that. Like, the rim pressure has been very important. But the decision-making just has not been great for him. Like, the shot selection has not always been great. Some of the passes have not been great. Some of the passing decisions have not been great. So I think if you have Chris Middleton operating more, you don't have him getting beat up off the ball, you're able to kind of set up your pick and roll attack with your best pull-up shooter. And that gives Phoenix something to think about. And then if there is a bend or there is a stunt, and you're able to hit Drew Holiday if he's in the weak side corner, if he's on the wing and he's lifting up or whatever. Now it's Drew Holiday catching on the move, and it makes it a little bit easier for him to get downhill. And the rim pressure, again, is his best asset offensively. So I think shifting things that way helps everyone.
Drew Holiday, team leading plus 22 in game three. Was that Drew Holiday slander? I was not prepared for that. That was not on my format sheet.
It's not Drew Holiday slander. It's just, you know, the shift work. That's all I'm saying.
Boy, can't wait to hear what you say about Jeff Teague after that. Jeez. What do you think about, let's stay on Drew. What do you think about his series? Because I the ball pressure on Chris Paul is interesting. I get why they're doing it, but it's Chris Paul, so he just kind of walks you down to wherever he wants to go and gets to wherever he wants to go anyways. Offensively, he made shots in game three. He came out firing in game two. He missed a lot of layups. Is it him not hitting shots? Is it him having to create everything? Is there a way to loosen him up? Do you see him being able to continue this kind of offensive performance going forward in the series?
I haven't loved Drew's series so far.
Couldn't tell.
Come on, man. Like, I really like Drew. Drew Holiday is genuinely one of my favorite players in the league. So it's not even one of those things.
Let me hold that mop.
Can I make my point, please? Oh, man. We got to get that one. We got to add that to the hashtag list. Okay. But anyway, Drew is genuinely one of my favorite players in the league. But, like I just mentioned, like, the rim pressure is so important for him. And he hasn't struggled getting to the rim. Like, he's been able to attack and pick and roll and get downhill. He's been able to iso and get downhill. They've occasionally posted him up, and he's been able to put a shoulder into a guy and get some decent looks there. But then he gets to the rim, and, like, he is just biffing everything. And I don't know what you do. Like, you can't scheme for that. I don't know what you do with a bunch of missed layups. So, like, it just makes it worse because, like, you don't trust him as a pull-up, sidestep, step-back shooter. So that already kind of limits the ceiling with him as a primary in this kind of series. And especially since Phoenix likes to switch as much as they do. Like, you're already kind of forcing him into, if he has to isolate, you're kind of baiting him into pull-ups if you can. So, like, that's already kind of a risky proposition. But then he gets downhill and the layups aren't going. So, like, if the shots hit the rim, he didn't get to the free throw line like that. If that's not happening, and the jumper's not really falling at a high clip, like, he's shooting, have the numbers up now, he's shooting a little over 35% for three on nearly six attempts, a lot of those coming off the bounce. Like, if you're not getting a lot of production there either, and then you look at some of the kickouts and it isn't great, then it's like, what is Drew in the half court? And if you're asking what Drew is in the half court in a high leverage playoff situation, then you zoom out and it's like, okay, we just gave Drew a bag. We sent out a whole lot of picks for Drew because he's going to be this massive upgrade over Eric Bledsoe. And, like, if you're having Bledsoe adjacent problems with Drew Holiday, then that doesn't look great. But, like, to his credit, like, he was better in game three. I do think... As hit or miss as the full court pressure has been with Drew on Chris Paul in particular, like, I do think his pressure in a vacuum has been positive. Like, I think he's been very good defensively. He's done a very good job of navigating screens and getting back into the play. So the defensive impact has been there on balance. The offense has just been such a mixed bag for me. It's hard for me to feel comfortable with what he's done in the series so far.
I got you. Who gets more hyped, Thanasis or Bobby Portis?
Ah, that's a good question. The answer is yes, but I think it's Portis by default because, like, I'm not choosing against Bobby Portis.
A wise move, wise man. Multiple Bobby chants in Milwaukee tonight, and I not going to say anything about it. Salute to y'all.
Hashtag good. The hashtag is good for him, folks. The hashtag is, in fact, good for him.
Yeah, we saw that.
We there is film of, you know, what the crowd did. It's great.
Pat Connaughton shooting 48% from three in the finals. He's made two or more threes in four straight playoff games. How do you feel about his minutes?
Mostly fine, because the three-point shooting has been what it is. It's just kind of unfortunate that he has been, at least in the first two games, that he's been hunted the way that he has been. And it's kind of put into question what Milwaukee does or what Milwaukee looks like when they go small. Like, I guess we can transition talk about Brook Lopez next, but that's kind of the bellwether, right? Like, he has to knock down enough threes, because on the other end, like, if Milwaukee does go small, or even if they don't, like, he's going to be the guy that they pick on. And he's not even a bad defender. He's just he's just the guy that they pick on. Like, he's the guy that's been chosen. So
I thought you were going to get us canceled first.
I was wondering why you were having that reaction while I was trying to find what I wanted to say. Now I get it. No, I'm not going to get us canceled. Oh, man. We don't have to talk about Phoenix playing FTWG. It's great. But he's been the guy in the first two games they picked on. So, like, he has to hit threes. Maybe not at a 48% clip, because that's just kind of – that's way above his head. But, like, he's made time – he's not just made threes, but he's made timely threes. Like, he's made run-ending stuff and run-capping stuff. And so as long as that continues, that gives Milwaukee a little bit more lineup versatility. And then continue to roll with him. Like, I think the minutes on balance have been fine.
No, obviously he's a big piece of what they're trying to do, and they need his shooting, especially if he's going to play. If they're going to go small, he's kind of the guy to fit that lineup without Dante DiVincenzo. And yeah, he's getting attacked on the other end, so he's going to have to hold his own. But that was part of my concern in watching the first two games. I wasn't sure if Milwaukee had the lineups to necessarily win this series. They have players that are playing well, can play well, but two-way lineups, can they consistently put the right people on the floor? You know, you look at the starting lineup, sometimes it's helping off PJ Tucker. You know, is it Portis and Lopez together? Is it Bryn Forbes? Is he going to get attacked? So it's just kind of finding their way. I think him playing well is a big piece for them. And he's made some time with Tommy Bucket, so I really just want to give him a shout. You mentioned Brook Lopez. Why does Milwaukee forget what he does when Giannis is playing?
That would be a question for Bud, which adds to a very, very, very long list of questions that Bud has this postseason and the postseason before that, and also the postseason before that, and probably the postseason before that. But I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't have a great sense for Brook in this series. Because they start switching him, they play him in a deeper drop, then they bring him up a little bit. So it still feels like they're just trying to find the right role for him defensively. And then offensively, sometimes it's exclusively him hanging around the dunker spot or trying to get some early seals. Sometimes it's exclusively him floating around the perimeter and just not doing anything, not screening or anything. So, like, I would like for them to find something. Like, he can do different things on offense. So, like, you know, in theory, he could be a guy that can play inside and play outside. But, like, it seems like they just choose one in a game or in a half. And then if it doesn't work, then, oh, well, just keep doing it. So, like, I would like for them to find something consistent that can work. Like, I think the post-ups can work, particularly if they're playing him in some minutes that Aiden's off the floor due to foul trouble or just rotation pattern or whatever. Like, I think they can find some post-ups for him and just get him involved. Like, start there. Get him a couple of early touches, then space him if necessary. But, like, I don't know what they're doing with him on either end. And it's weird. And now I'm looking at the box score for tonight. Like, he played 21 minutes tonight. And was a plus six in those minutes, but I don't.
He's a big fella's working defensively. I mean, he's doing what he's being asked to do. I think as the last two games, he's, I think, grown more comfortable with what he's being asked to do as far as the drop goes, getting a little bit closer to the level, dropping back with Ayton. And when he has those opportunities, taking away some of those roles, he's had some good weak side rotations. So he's, I think he's finding his way defensively. Offensively, it's just interesting. I feel like he's spaced a lot. And, you know, we have scenarios where he's either bombing away from three or he's driving, which, I mean, Brooke can drive from three. But I don't know if you want him just doing that. And I feel like Phoenix is very comfortable with a switch or a transition mismatch or whoever ends up guarding him and knowing they're not going to be made to pay for it. So I just would like to see maybe a couple post-ups, maybe something a little bit different just to mix it up, just to get him more involved. Because if you get him going, you have Middleton going, you have Drew going, you have Giannis going, you have multiple things you can go to. I think he could be, I think he can have more of an impact offensively if used correctly.
Am I allowed to say fair enough, or is that going to be taken negatively?
Jeff Teague averaging 12 minutes a game this finals, by the way.
Jeff Teague played 13 minutes tonight, and Bryn Forbes got 4 minutes. It's interesting to me.
Told you.
Bud has his guys, man. Like, I don't, you know, shout out to Jeff Teague, who's a +9 in 13 minutes tonight. Good for him. But, no, wait. You don't get the smile over the +9 for Jeff Teague, because Jeff Teague didn't score either. So if we're not giving KZ Okpala props for going scoreless and being impossible to court, we're not doing this for Jeff Teague either. Pick one.
I already stated the fact that you led with KZ Okpala is what led to my slander. Mm-hmm. I would have been totally fine giving him his shouts. Mm-hmm. But you let off that history. You know what? I'm not doing that. I'm not rehashing that. I'm not going to be the focus of today's Big Mad. I'm in a good place mentally. So
I just found it curious. I don't know. We got the patented Steve Jones Jr. grin once Jeff Teague's plus minus was brought up. But when I bring up KZ Okpala, it's an issue. I just found that interesting. That's all.
I have Jeff fatigue right now.
I too have Jeff fatigue. Same. This is why we're doing the podcast together. We have so much in common. Wow, this is great.
PJ Tucker on Devin Booker. How do you feel about it?
It's gone better than I expected.
You didn't believe me on the pod last time.
I just wanted to see if they were going to actually do it, and they did it. And it's been fine. Like, Devin, quiet night for Devin Booker tonight.
Like, PJ has been a real pest since the second half of game two, especially with the off-ball actions. I think he's bothering with the physicality, getting over the screens. I'm very interested to see what Phoenix does to loosen things up for Devin Booker. I didn't see as much of the screening for him. Mm-hmm. You know, usually they'll screen for him, like, you know, when he's on the block or in the middle of the floor, kind of give him some of those angles to work with and move PJ off the ball. I want to see if they get to that going forward. I didn't feel like they really went to Spain pick and roll as much as they had in game two. And so I just feel like there's multiple ways you can kind of get Devin Booker going, and they're going to need him. But man, yeah, I salute to PJ Tucker.
Do we call it actually, never mind. PJ Tucker has been pretty good.
Nope. You got to say it now.
I mean, I don't have to say it. You slandered him earlier.
When did I? You know what? Nope.
I was, you know, it's, I'm glad we got back here. I'm glad PJ Tucker is getting the respect that he deserves. I'm glad you have turned a corner on PJ Tucker.
Turned a corner. All right, man. All right. I'm going to turn a corner on this pod. What are you saying?
We don't have to do that. We can. There's just a couple more questions that we can kind of wrap this thing. Heading into game four, Phoenix, again, just lost by 20 in game three, 120 to 100. What adjustments do you expect to see from Phoenix in game four?
Honestly, I expect them to get back to doing what they do well. I felt like they just got away from what got them the 2-0 lead in the first place on both ends of the floor. Even watching that first quarter, you know, I was still impressed with that combination that Phoenix presents offensively, where they pick you apart, they bend your defense, they mix in the tough shots, they kind of control the game that way. And then it kind of just stopped. It felt like the execution just slowed down to a crawl. There wasn't the multiple actions. There wasn't the patience. There wasn't, okay, you guarded this play, now you have to guard this. That element felt like it was missing. Obviously, they missed some shots, and then that hurts. And then defensively, I thought they were a little bit out of character as far as putting two on the ball against Middleton, not containing penetration. Transition defense wasn't great. So I felt like it didn't feel like Suns basketball to me. So I feel like the big adjustment for them, and it's boring, but is getting back to playing Phoenix Suns basketball and understanding that they have to play and have to take certain things away for them to win. They're not just going to win by showing up. So I would expect more execution offensively. I'd expect more pick and roll. I'd expect more movement. You know, we didn't get as much empty corner stuff. We didn't get as much, you know, spam pick and roll, double pick and roll. We didn't get as much of the extras from Phoenix as I had expected watching that one. So I would expect them just to get back to doing what they do.
I would agree with that. Like, I would also add, like, one thing that stood out to me in game one in particular, like, Phoenix pushed a lot more after makes than I anticipated. Like, really just, you know, in addition to the diverse playbook that they have, and they really did a little bit of everything in game one, like, they also just got into stuff earlier. Like, just caught Milwaukee off guard, didn't let them get set. So, like, I would like to see them mix that in a little bit more. Like, I don't think they want to get into a track meet per se. I mean, Milwaukee, on balance, wants to play faster than Phoenix does. So, you don't want to completely bend your style that way. But, like, there are going to be some pockets where you can kind of push and catch Milwaukee flat-footed or catch them scrambling, catch them trying to match up with some guys. So, you don't have to get into your Spains. You don't have to get into some of the other stuff that you run. Catch Milwaukee off guard, get some early offense, get them scrambling. Because, I mean, we've seen throughout the postseason run, as good as Milwaukee's defense has been on balance, like, you can still catch them botching a switch. Sometimes you have two to the, you get two to the ball. Sometimes you have one guy dropping, one guy, you run a double drag. You got one guy dropping, one guy trying to switch to get some confusion there. So, like, you can get them off balance. So find some pockets to push. And then I'm just with you completely. Like, do what you were doing. Like, go back to, don't send two to the ball against Chris Middleton. Like, I love Chris Middleton, but, like, make him shoot over the top of you. Like, that's what he wants to do anyway. Don't make it easier for him.
You love him more than family members?
Yeah, that's probably accurate, yeah. Both the Chris's.
Okay, yeah. All right. We'll just tuck that away for a later date and time. I'll ask you a question real quick.
Okay.
Was this a series-shifting win for Milwaukee?
This is a boring answer, but it kind of depends on Phoenix, honestly, because I think the shift, I mean, again, like, Giannis was incredible in game two and they lost, and Giannis was incredible in this game as well. Like, not saying that he didn't do anything differently, but, like, you know, that there wasn't like a super big shift in what or how Giannis attacked or anything like that. Like, the shift was Phoenix getting more aggressive against, like, Chris Middleton in pick and roll, like, opening up those rotations for Milwaukee. So then you get Giannis going off and you get the other guys starting to make shots and able to roll. So, like, it's kind of on Phoenix. Like, if Phoenix is going to continue to make that gamble, again, I understand it. Like, Chris Middleton isn't a great passer, so you can fluster him. You know, he's not always a quick decision maker, and, like, the handle itself isn't tight. So you can pressure him and kind of force him in turn. So I understand the bet, but, like, it's going to be on Phoenix. If you're going to do that, you have to abort mission early if it's not working. And then get back to your base and force Milwaukee to basically shoot over the top of you and just turn into a one-on-one battle. So I, since I'm kind of putting on this on Phoenix, like, I don't think it can be a series shifter for Milwaukee. But, like, that's what I'm going to be watching in game four. Like, heading into the series, I'm just like, okay, how is Milwaukee going to try to defend Phoenix? Now I'm kind of like, what is Phoenix going to do to defend Milwaukee now? Because, like, they won the first two games doing something, and then they tried something different in game three, and it didn't work.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on this one. It definitely lets you know Milwaukee has more of a shot than you felt coming into it, but they still have just low margin for error. You know, if Middleton and or Holiday has a rougher game, then we might be telling a different story. Those kind of things. So Milwaukee, the defense probably is was more important to me than some of the offense. Like Middleton being put two on the ball, that can shift the series. If Phoenix is going to do that all series, we got a whole different ball game. But if Milwaukee can find a way to at least live with what Phoenix is doing offensively and get those stops and scrap, they give themselves a better chance than what we saw in the first two games. So I don't know if I throw it all the way into series shifting category, but they definitely got a shot. They just have to kind of sustain this level of play on both ends of the floor. It's kind of weird. Like, I feel impressed by what they did, but also let me see it again. Let me see if y'all can do that one more time.
Right. And I guess to that effect, and then we can end it here. Like, so have you seen anything in this that kind of makes you waver on the Suns and six pick that we made on the series review?
No.
Okay. Still hanging with that then?
Yes.
Okay. I am with you there. I'm still Suns and six. Like, I will say, like, I prefaced that pick. Like, I didn't know what Giannis was going to look like. So, like, I'm sticking with Suns and six because I do think overall, I think they're a better team. And I think this seems very easily correctable. Again, like, just keep things in front instead of blitzing and just make Milwaukee beat you with tough shots. Like, they can do that, but, like, that's a higher level of difficulty. But Giannis being healthy and dominating the way he has, like, it's definitely raised my eyebrow a little bit. So I'm curious to see what game four is going to look like.
Epke Udo or Bam Adebayo?
I'm sorry, what was it?
Epke Udo or Bam Adebayo?
Let me pull up the Team USA box score real quick. Hold on. Let's see. Bam was a minus 11 in 17 minutes. And Epke Udo was not that. So thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Dunker Spot. if you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve at SteveJones20. With that, we will catch y'all in the middle of the week.
You don't say.